last word on sport.
With Energia, supporting Irish rugby at every level. Energia, think of the possibilities.
And so let's start the last word on sport with football. Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent, is with us. But I'm going to start with Will O'Callaghan, host of the Hurling Pod and Off the Ball, because I think we should acknowledge the 33,000 plus people who turned up in the cold in the Aviva yesterday to watch Bohemians beat Shamrock Rovers. As a start to the League of Ireland season, on a weekend when over 50,000 people went to the games, how important you think was it for giving the league a good kickoff?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we had plenty of drama across the weekend. Even before we got to the Aviva Stadium on Sunday, people were watching on TV on Friday night or possibly listening to the radio for Shelburne starting off with a 3-1 win against their title rivals from last year, Derry, with the game stopped for quite a period of time because of a power outage. And it turned out that one of the Shelburne fans who was there was actually an ESB engineer who was able to then divert the right people to come along, get the lights back on and get the TV going. So that's incredibly lucky. It's like a doctor being on a flight if something goes wrong. So there was something very greatest league in the world about the way that the actual season started off on Friday. And then, as you mentioned, you know, a League of Ireland record broken for a regular season game by more than 33,000 people attending the match between Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers, with Bowes winning by a goal to nil. Bowes probably the better team in the first half. I thought Shamrock Rovers had quite a bit of control in the second half, but couldn't get the breakthrough. Maybe they were a little bit tired from their trip to Norway to take on Molde during the week. And understandably, their focus will now be this Thursday at Tallaght Stadium, trying to finish that job and getting into the next stage of the Conference League. But generally, I think it's a very good product when you put it at the Aviva. The question would be now that because Bohemians were able to sell so many tickets in this joint venture with their rivals, will we see another game between Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians at Dalymount Park for quite some time? Because you would think the temptation would be now, Matt, if it's accessible for them for the next few derbies, and if they know that so many tickets can be sold, and I appreciate this was the first weekend, so it had a certain novelty factor as well, but Dalymount won't be able to host 1/5 or 1/6 of the crowd that they'll probably be able to get in. I wonder if this isn't the first of a few games we're going to see at the Aviva between these two.
And what about other teams? I mean, with the likes of Shelburne and St. Pat's, for example, you know, if they were to play in an FAI Cup final, I'm sure they'd fill the Aviva. Why not try it for a league match, for example?
Hey, look, the option is open there. The FAI have already said at the start of the season, and they reiterated that stance last week in the media pre the league getting underway, that they will open the doors for other clubs for the Aviva Stadium if they request to do so. So again, you'd have to get into a position where you'd have an agreement between two clubs who would want to play a regular season game there. But I think it's a great product for the TV, Matt, when you see the Aviva Stadium sparkling on the first day of the season. I appreciate some people had travel problems getting in because the Dart, particularly from a south side direction, had works yesterday. So a lot of people, you know, had public transport issues getting in. There was a massive crowd outside the Aviva about 15, 20 minutes before the game kicked off, which was far from ideal on the weekend that was in it. But I wonder if some other clubs might not look at this and think, OK, there is the potential here for us to put on a huge game. Like, imagine if towards the end of the season, two clubs were to agree in a title race that they play a game at the Aviva on a weekend. It could be absolutely cracking.
Okay, and just before I bring Miguel in though as well, another thing though, Stephen Bradley, the Shamrock Rovers manager after the game, not happy with Heimer Hallgrimsson, the Republic of Ireland manager. Why not?
So Heimer Hallgrimsson said last week that he was impressed by how some of the players had played for Shamrock Rovers, without name-checking any of them in the game against Molde, but he said some had played very well. He was asked in a loose enough way about the fact that Shamrock Rovers already have some players that have been capped by Ireland, and could they potentially come into contention to come into an international squad. What annoyed Stephen Bradley, Matt, was the fact that Heimer Hallgrimsson heavily indicated that clubs across Europe will now be looking at Shamrock Rovers players because they've had a run in Europe, and he heavily hinted that actually they need to go to a club outside of Ireland if they're to get in to the Ireland squad. And Stephen Bradley felt this was a moment of disrespect. He was saying in his press conference last night after the game that Heimer Hallgrimsson should be respecting the league, and it felt like there was a disconnect from the top of the FAI down to what's happening in the league itself. So his nose was definitely put out of joint by the idea from the Ireland manager that these players need to leave if they're to get international caps.
It's an interesting point, Miguel Delaney, because a lot of people would say, look, the standard of the League of Ireland is not as such that a player can transition to playing international football. But if the likes of Rovers players are succeeding in Europe, then doesn't that suggest that if they can do it at the club level in Europe, even if it is the Conference League, that then they have a greater claim towards the national squad, particularly when the national squad is full of players from the lower divisions in England?
I think there's a bit of a multi-layered debate here. Like, with Hamer's comments, I mean, he has to deal with the reality he faces. And despite Rovers' progress in Europe, I think the general view in the football industry, I suppose, is that the League of Ireland is still below League One, say. Now, again, that's open to debate, and we'll see how progress goes in the next few years. But, of course, that's where I think the weekend is so key. Now, just on Hamer's point, I suppose, I have a little bit of sympathy for him just because of the job he has to do. And I mean, like, it's been the reality of Irish football for 40 years or more, that our best players have gone away. That ultimately you want more players playing at the highest level. This should be what they ascend to. And I think there's more questions really about the historic structure or the historic maybe attitudes to the League of Ireland rather than necessarily an issue with Hamer's comments. But I think that, again, that's where the weekend is so interesting. And I mean, I have to say, like obviously I'm based in England. I work for an English media outlet. My main job, say, is covering the Premier League. And like, I've spent the last few days writing about, on Friday, the Manchester City and their Abu Dhabi ownership and an APT case, Associated Party Transactions. Yesterday, I'm writing about two billionaires owning Tottenham and Manchester United and what that's done to the club. And I do think there is a little bit of almost a kind of a swing back against this, which League of Ireland is benefiting from, because people see it as almost a more authentic level of football, which at the moment it is. And I suppose the key now for the league is to really start to kind of maximise that and use it to raise levels generally and improve structures.
I see actually yesterday when you were at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for the game against Manchester United, you described it as the worst football match I've attended this season. Compelling in its own way. Was it that compelling?
It was kind of like, it was just so remarkably low quality. Especially given the expense of the two clubs and the wealth of the two clubs. And it was a fairly dull game, but then kind of almost made, suddenly kind of sparked into life because of error, really, rather than quality. And I know that's a bit unfair on the players, but it's more about the kind of context they're in. But yeah, I mean, Spurs, to be fair, I suppose you can maybe see a little bit of kind of progress now. They're getting players back, although I didn't think they were particularly good. United, I mean, look, again, to be fair, there's the issue of the calendar here, and they suddenly had this spout of injuries, particularly to Amad Diallo and Kobbie Mainoo, which could really worsen their season somehow even more. But it was just it to watch United, it's just so dispiriting at the moment. It's almost a demoralising experience watching them, and it is really, it just feels like a club that has bottomed out in so many ways and for really so many reasons.
Should Amrin, though, be more careful in what he says? I mean, he can't be turning around and trying to put a glass half full approach on it by pretending things are better than they are, because fans would react to that. But by comments like, my job is so hard, is he really going to win people over with that type of attitude?
I think some of it there is, ultimately, he's in a situation where his team is putting in, he's got games every 3 or 4 days. His team are mostly putting in unconvincing performances. And when you're facing the media before games, after games, and also two different forms of media, I suppose there comes an extent of what else can you say? Because then if he stuck to the same message all the time, we'd probably criticise him of being boring and not necessarily having the charisma for the job. So I suppose he's trying to navigate that. And I think there's just something bigger here, that United, to a certain degree, they've obviously given Amorim licence to just to build this club from scratch, to build this team from scratch almost. They're going to have a massive overhaul. But obviously there's some way off being able to even start that due to the PSR concerns that led to such limited business in January. And hence he's kind of at the moment almost in this no man's land where he's obviously trying to start the future, but the future isn't like, and you can see now why he wanted to stay at Sporting until the end of the season.
Okay, well, let's look at the rest of the league. Will, I suppose, with Nottingham Forest being beaten at Fulham, now 13 points behind Liverpool, I think any romantic notions that they could have a challenge for the title are finally gone, if anyone really believed it. So we now have a two-horse race, and we almost, I think, need to be thankful for Arsenal's ability to pull out the two late goals against Leicester, or else we'd be saying almost done and dusted today, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and for a long time in that game, you wondered if it was going to be just a frustrating afternoon for Arsenal where they wouldn't score. Leandro Trossard and Raheem Sterling both tried to lead the attack at the weekend, but there's no area on the right-hand side who was making all the difference. And then ultimately, it'd be Mikel Moreno, who played at centre-forward for the first time in his career, to score two goals late on. And he showed a very good attacking instinct with his positioning, particularly for the header for the first one. And again, he just kind of drifted into the right type of space for the second goal, which completely killed the game. But is he now going to have to be their emergency number nine while there are players out for a sustained period of time? Or is it a case of relying on a teenager to provide nearly all of the spark of creativity? Because at the weekend, Raheem Sterling in particular cut a very frustrated figure. He struggled against Leicester when they went into a low block, and they were happy enough to defend everything that Arsenal were throwing at them up until about 15 minutes to go within that game. And that's a Leicester team, Matt, who are so bereft of confidence at the moment. 9 defeats in their last 10 league games, haven't kept a clean sheet now for 21 matches across all competitions. On the face of it, this should have been a very easy win for Arsenal against a team who are struggling for confidence and from stopping teams from scoring goals. Arsenal made really, really hard work of it. But as I'm sure we'll talk about Liverpool in a moment, Liverpool second half, remarkable what happened at Anfield. First time since 2003 in the league that they haven't had a shot in 45 minutes at home. And definitely there were a lot of Liverpool fans who were a little bit nervy after Cunha's goal, that Liverpool kind of hung on a little bit for that 2-1 win. It took their great closer Endo to come on to actually get the game finished out. So neither team were perfect across the weekend, but Liverpool's lead stays out in front of Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, and then, of course, the other one, Arsenal, Miguel, I think people were looking at Raheem Sterling. Could he take the opportunity being afforded to him? And it had all the appearances of his career might nearly be finished, is it?
His lack of impact was so striking. And again, like people might dispute the idea that he was one of the best players in Europe, or best forwards in Europe 5 years ago. But ultimately, he was scoring what? He was getting close to 20 goals in the team that would have been considered among the best in Europe, Pep Guardiola's Manchester City. So even to go from that, and at a point where Real Madrid wanted him in 2020, to this now, and he's still only 30. I mean, it really is striking. But then you do wonder, I think there is merit in this point, that I think it was Gary Neville that raised it, that particularly fast players, I think they're in football medical departments, they call them kind of twitch fiber players, like Michael Owen, who have that initial explosiveness that propels their career. If they start at 16, 17, as Sterling and Michael Owen did, it means like by the time they're 30, they feasibly potentially like feel like a 34-year-old, a 35-year-old player. And I think that is possibly an issue here. But on that generally as well, and I think it's illustrated even maybe with Liverpool a little bit too, given they've avoided injury so much. I think injury crises in general, given how congested this calendar is, given that we're in the build-up of three or four years of an intense calendar, I think it's potentially going to play havoc with the end of this season.
It is, man. We had a discussion with Mark Lawrenson and Tony Cascarino on Friday night. They were going on about all the hamstring injuries that players, and you know, they were wondering as well, could it be that the pitches that we now have compared to what they played with in their time, because they said nobody had the type of hamstring injuries that kept people out for months and needing injuries back in their time as now. But so that's another issue. A final one though, Miguel, to finish off. Maybe have we seen the way Manchester City will try and go at Real Madrid in the reverse tie with their 3-2 down, in the way that they went against Newcastle? Long balls, hit them long from Ederson and see if one of the centre forwards can get on the end of them.
Well, especially given Real Madrid have missing centre halves. Yeah, it certainly does add a new dimension to that match. And I mean, I have to say, I would have thought after Wednesday, after Madrid's late win, and after how easy City were to get at, that would have been pretty much it. But I think you're right. Two things changed this game now. Nico Gonzalez, even if he's not Rodri, he just gives Guardiola that defensive midfielder he wanted. I think that made a difference. And then obviously, yeah, the direct approach and Marmoush suddenly kind of fitting in. So it could change a fair bit about this match. I think the other side to it, to be fair, has to be acknowledged, is Newcastle certainly didn't look like the Newcastle that had beaten Man United over Christmas or knocked Arsenal out of the League Cup. In fact, it was almost, they were a shadow of that team, really.
Okay, we will leave it there with you, Miguel Delaney, Chief Football Writer of The Independent.
The last word on sport.
With Energia, supporting Irish rugby at every level. Energia, think of the possibilities.